You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Welcome to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Casey. You know, in these polarizing times, there's less attention on what we all have in common. Our guest today, Harry Kramer, notes that one thing we definitely all have in common is that we all get 168 hours each week, God willing. And the question becomes, how are we investing those 168 hours? Are our choices thoughtful? Are they fully aligned with our values? Harry Kramer is the author of Your 168, Finding Purpose and Satisfaction in a Values-Based Life. He's professor of management and strategy at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, where he teaches in the MBA and the executive MBA programs, and was a professor of the year. He is an executive partner with Madison Dearborn Partners, one of the largest private equity firms in the U.S., and is former chairman and CEO of Baxter International, Inc., a multi-billion dollar global healthcare company. Harry Kramer is also the best-selling author of two leadership books, From Values to Action and Becoming the Best. So, Harry, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Joe. Great to be with you.
My first question is, why is 168 your favorite number?
Yeah, so maybe, Joe, is my math background, being a math major, but I always used to hear people tell me, Joe, that, well, I'd like to do that, Harry, but I don't have the time. And then I started to think about time, and I realized, wait a minute, you got the time, you got 168 hours in a week. So if you'd say, hey, it's not a priority, that's okay, but you definitely have the time. And it was funny, Joe, because when I give a lot of talks for this 1 acre fund, we'll talk about the fun thing, Joe, is I'll sometimes do a talk, the company will buy some copies of the book, and the one fellow CEO said, well, I haven't read the book yet. What's the 168? I don't know. And I said, well, when you're having a really bad week, I mean a really bad week, how hard are you working? The guy said, well, 24/7. Well, multiply it out, carry the two. You usually get 168. It's, in my mind, thinking about your time is pretty helpful.
And after the books you've written on leadership, what inspired you to write your 168?
Yeah, Joe, it's real interesting. When I was stepping down as a CEO of Baxter, I had the opportunity to come back to Northwestern Kellogg to teach. And I have to tell you, Joe, all my ideas really come from the students. Because when I first started teaching, Joe, they said, hey, you know, you've been the CEO, you're on these boards. How do you become a leader? How do you become a leader? And that led to that first book, From Values to Action. How do you be a leader? And then the next question the students asked, Joe, was, well, okay, that's how you become a leader. How do you lead an organization? And that sort of was the second book, Becoming Your Best. And I thought, okay, I'm done, Joe. I'm all done. And then about a year ago, they said, well, you know, here's the real question. How do you live a value-based life? I may be a leader. I may be able to lead an organization. I know you've got your significant HR experience. But how do you live a value-based life? And I thought, yeah, that's a good one. So I said, I'll work on that the next couple of years. And the publisher said, no. We really need it by June. We know how many talks you give. And I said, all right, well, and it's going to be a while. I'll tell you what, if you get us the book and you get us the book by June, we'll make another big contribution to the 1 acre fund. I said, okay, fine. So now when I give talks, Joe, some of the companies, they use all three books. How do you be a leader? How do you lead an organization? But how do you, Joe, how do you live a value-based life?
And Harry, how would you contrast a life that's based on values versus one that's, let's say, less so?
Yeah, I'm sure, Joe, we'll talk a little bit about self-reflection. But the way I think about it, Joe, if you're not self-reflective, and you don't know what your values are, as you well know, Joe, you end up very confused and you end up very surprised, all right? And you do a lot of things that, and if you thought to yourself, well, why did you do that? I mean, you don't really have a purpose. There's not a lot of meaning. And I look at the world when I see a lot of crazy things go on. Why do people do that? Well, if you don't have values, if you're not responsible to anybody other than yourself, and it's what can I get away with? Well, then no wonder we have the problems we got in the world today, Joe. I really think it starts with values. And it's interesting, Joe, sometimes students will say to me, well, Harry, how do you think of values versus preferences or whatever? And this is probably a crazy simple example, Joe, but I'll sometimes say, well, if you and I are in a meeting, Joe, and we got a group of people, I may say, you know, Joe, let's not swear. Let's not use four-letter words. Now, if you do, I'm not going to fire you. I'm just going to let you know I don't like. That's a preference. But the way I think about it, Joe, and I tell the students, when you see what your values, I think of it as what is non-negotiable, what is absolutely non-negotiable, and you'd never compromise. And I almost kind of think of it, Joe, if you're willing to compromise and you're willing to negotiate, well, it may be important, but how could it be a value? And that's sort of the way I think about it.
So you mentioned self-reflection. Harry, why do you think self-reflection is so important? And I'm curious also, how does it fit into your day-to-day?
Sure, sure. Joe, I had the opportunity, and I may have mentioned this in the book, I had the opportunity, I went to a small college in Wisconsin, Lawrence University. I admit this now, Joe, I was dating a young lady, Julie. She was a freshman. I met her first day of college. I got very lucky. I was a senior. I know we got some similar backgrounds here, Joe. You have to tell me. And the crazy part of it is I started dating her, but then I moved down to Chicago. And I tell my five children, Joe, they can't do this now. But back then, I would hitchhike up to Appleton, Wisconsin to visit her. And this went on for several months. And then her father called me, this very intense Irish guy from Minnesota. And he said, I know what's going on here. You know, my daughter's 17. We need to talk. I said, super, fine. He said, no. You come to Minnesota. So I flew up to Minnesota thinking that we go to a football game or something. He goes, no. I've got it set up. We're going on a retreat. And I said, what's a retreat? He goes, well, you'll find out. You're going to spend a little time thinking about your values and your purpose. And then he said something, Joe, that if I had heard this before, I wouldn't have done it. He said, I should tell you before we go now, I said, after I'm in Minnesota. He said, it's a silent retreat. I said, what does that mean? He goes, you can't shut up for 3 minutes. You're not going to be talking for the next 3 days, right? So I said to myself, how much do I like this guy's daughter, right? I could be back in Chicago in 20 minutes. And I thought, now I better check this out. So I did this, and it was run by the Jesuits, Joe, pretty intense group of guys, as you know. And what they basically did was they gave you some things to think about. What are your values? What's your purpose? What matters? And the thing ended, Joe, with them saying, this shouldn't be a one-time exercise. You should take 15 minutes a day and do a personal self-examination, which I've done, Joe, 15 minutes a day, almost now for the last 40 years. And end of the story, I always say, Joe, I married his daughter. In fact, you and I got married the same day, August 9th, 1980, which I can't get my head around. But for Joe, here's the crazy part. I'm usually traveling a lot, like you probably, other than COVID. But for the last now almost 40 years, no matter what's going on, Joe, the first weekend in December, in fact, for me, it was last weekend, I fly to Minnesota. I go on this annual 3-day silent Jesuit retreat. And I got to tell you, taking the time, Joe, to figure out, slow down and separate, Joe, activity and productivity. As you know, we're very active, but how productive are we? Are we moving so fast? We have no idea.
I especially appreciate your points in the book on planning and how it doesn't preclude fun. It actually creates space for it. How do you think planning and spontaneity coexist?
Yeah, I'm smiling, Joe, because you're right on top of it, right? I mean, you're a pretty sharp guy. When I talk about this in class, there'll always be some students who'll say, I kind of like the concept, but I like a little spontaneity. I like to be able to, and boy, it looks like you're putting me into a straitjacket. And I said, no, it actually works the opposite. And they said, well, how could that be? And I said, well, guess what? If you're planful, you build in a certain amount of flexibility, a certain amount of degrees of freedom. And then I'll look at the students and I'll say, now, how many of you, let's be honest, when you were an undergraduate and you got a 2-week term paper to write, you were there the last night with 20 books up till 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, if I walked into that room that night and said, hey, I got some tickets to a show, well, you can't go. You have no degrees of freedom. But if you had been planful, wrote a couple pages every day, then you'd have more flexibility. And then the way I usually end, Joe, and maybe one of your listeners will take me up on this. Nobody has, Joe, but no one has. But I pretty much know in my mind what I'm going to do for the next 6 to 9 months. I kind of have that all planned out, right? Now, it's all planned out, Joe. But if you, Joe, or any of your buddies call me next week and say, I've got 2 extra tickets for Bruce Springsteen in Dallas, I'll be in Dallas. I mean, I'll be there, Joe. Just invite me, okay? And so in my mind, the more planful you are, then you can say, hey, wait a minute. I'm going to be in New Jersey 6 weeks from now. Hey, Joe mentioned getting together. Wait a minute. I could combine. Or I could change. I'll move. To me, the more planful, the more degrees of freedom and the more spontaneity you have. It works the opposite, Joe, is exactly what people would think.
And Harry, that mention of Bruce Springsteen leads me to another anecdote that you had shared in the book, I believe, about your Baxter days and when a meeting would get canceled and you had a free hour. And tell us a little bit about what you used to do when that opportunity would come up.
Yeah. So again, Joe, you're really jumping on a lot of great things, because often executives will say to me, well, Harry, you were the CEO of a $12 billion company. So you know that in these roles, literally, it's lonely at the top. And I remember thinking to myself, lonely at the top? I'd give anything to be lonely. I mean, I got stuff going on from like 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. I'm looking for an opportunity to be lonely. And what you picked up on, Joe, if I was going to have a meeting at 2 o'clock and another one at 3, and Kathy would come in and say, oh, Harry, I got some news, the bad, that meeting was canceled. Canceled. When's my next meeting? 3 o'clock. Wow. Okay, I'll be back. I jump in my convertible, Joe. Nobody knows. I shoot over to McDonald's, go through the, grab a Diet Coke. I park the thing, put the top down, and I'm listening to Waiting on a Sunny Day by Bruce Springsteen for, I got 55 minutes before I've got to be back in the office.
I love that story. This convertible makes the whole thing too. So another story that got my attention was a conversation you and your wife had about TV. And I was wondering if you could share that anecdote.
Yeah. You got all my favorite ones, Joe. I didn't know where this was going. So the crazy one on this one, this kind of goes back, Joe, a little bit to what people like you and I deal with. You got 4 kids, I got 5. There's a lot going on. And you think about all the things you're trying to do, right? You're dealing with your career, your family, maybe your spirituality, your health, exercise, a little bit of sleep, a little bit of fun, maybe making a difference in the world while we're passing through. And when I would talk about the 168, and most of my ideas come from Julie, she said, you know, you keep talking about this 168, but where do we spend a lot of time? And we say we're only going to spend an hour, and it's 3 hours. We get virtually nothing out of it. And of course, I don't know how it works with you, Joe, but rather than just telling me, we play this guessing game, I guess. I said, all right, I give up. And she said, well, television. I said, what do you mean? She said, let's just stop watching television. We'll save a tremendous amount of time. But I was a little sensitive, and I said, wait a minute. I need the news. I need to know what's going on. But being very bright, she went to Kellogg as well. She said, wait a minute, you know, stop. Harry, you know, you read the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Financial Times, the Economist. By the time you watch the news, the only thing you missed is JoJo, you know, the giraffe escaped from the zoo. You missed nothing of significance. So I tell the students, and they're in shock when I say this, I haven't watched television for like 35 years. And usually one student, Joe, will immediately say, but what about sports? What about sports? I said, all right, rather than answering with an answer, Joe, answer with a question. Are you going to exercise? Are you going to watch other people exercise? And there's nothing wrong with watching other people exercise, but do you do that 2 hours a week? You know, if you got a favorite team, I said, I've got one brother. He watches other people exercise like 20 hours a week. Now, if he's happy, Joe, that's okay, because his 168 is different than mine. But I tease him and say, you've only got 148, pal. Remember that, 168 minus 20. I said, as long as you're happy. To which he, being from Boston, Joe, made the mistake of saying, well, I'm not happy. I said, why are you not happy? He said, they're paying that guy $35 million a year. He's batting .210. I don't understand how they're paying that guy $35 million. I understand, because you're watching him, right? If you weren't drinking the beer and the potato chips, then you can only get away with this, Joe, if you're the oldest brother. You can only get away with your oldest
absolutely,
brother.
Absolutely. Yeah. My solution is to run on my zero runner while watching the game. So get a twofer. But sports is a tough one.
And what's important, as you know, Joe, is everybody's different, right? And I always say, so whatever's important to you, super. But the beauty of all of this, Joe, the beauty of all of this sincerely is limit the surprise, right? If you don't spend any time with your children, just realize, well, I'm probably not going to, and maybe that's okay, right? If you say, well, my job's so important, nothing else matters, and then your marriage has got issues, just don't be surprised. In fact, people always tease me, Joe. I'll say, well, what's one of the big benefits of this self-reflection? And I will always say, it minimizes the surprise. But there's a lot of people, Joe, you and I know them. There's a lot of people walking around. They're really surprised, and we're surprised they're surprised.
So another topic is transitions, and they can be challenging, that we know. And I'm curious, what was the transition like for you when you decided to retire as CEO of Baxter, and what led you to teaching the MBA program at Kellogg?
Yeah, and given your work, Joe, you'll appreciate this, because I know you spend a lot of time helping people with transitions. So when I first was announced that I was going to leave Baxter, my initial thought was, oh, well, I guess I'm going to run another company. And the good news was I talked to some really good people, Joe, who literally said, well, before you do that, think about this a minute, okay? This is not like you're 50 and, oh, over the next 5 years, you know, you're going to be sort of retiring. Harry, if you retire, Harry, when you're 50 or 55, you could actually be retired for longer than you were working. I mean, Harry, if you take care of your health, you may, God willing, you may have another 30 years. And the big question really was, well, Harry, two questions I thought were really insightful, Joe, probably similar to the work that you do. The one fellow said, well, Harry, before you jump into your next thing, what do you have to prove and to who? And I thought, well, I'm at a point now. I don't think I have anything to prove to anybody. Well, then, Harry, why don't you figure out what would make you happy? Well, why don't you think of what would give you meaning? What do you feel like your calling would be? And I thought, well, that's interesting. And then the other great question, Joe, which I remember this day because this is now 15 years ago, was, Harry, do you want your next role, your work piece, do you want to be that a singular event, or do you want to collect what I thought the word was potpourri until Julie said, no, it's potpourri. It's potpourri. And can, you want to collect a bunch of things. And I thought, well, you know, if I collected several things rather than one main event, that could probably give me a lot more flexibility with the children, with other things that are important, and so on. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. And the dean at Kellogg said, Harry, we'd love to have you teach. And then people said, Harry, you could do that. And then I had a buddy at Madison Dearborn said, well, Harry, you could be on some of our boards, right? And then over time, I had this student, we'll talk about this 1 acre fund. So I literally have this collection of activities, Joe, where the beauty of it is I'm as busy now as when I was at Baxter, but I have total flexibility. If Kellogg says, hey, can you do this seminar down in South America? Oh, hey, Julie, you want to go to South America? I don't think so. Well, maybe I've got a board meeting that week. Well, do I really? You know, a little bit of flexibility, Joe, which when you're doing one thing, as you know, with you with Merrill Lynch, whatever, you got to be somewhere. You got to be there because that's your singular event. So this whole idea of collecting various pieces and then be as busy as you want and have as much flexibility. And I got to tell you, Joe, I turned 65 and I told the dean at Kellogg, it's unfortunate. I'm down on my last 20 years now. I've only got 20 more years to teach. Okay. It's a godsend, Joe. And literally thinking, what's important to you, important to your spouse if you happen to be married, and how do you think about what would give you benefit? And I have to tell you, Joe, I so love teaching value-based leadership. I mean, the world we're living in now, I won't get into politics, but if I thought we needed more value-based leaders 12 years ago, the need now, I would say, is exponential. So I'm into this, Joe, in a big way, in a very big way.
It sounds like you learned quite a bit from your students.
Absolutely, Joe. Absolutely. I always quote, there's a St. Francis quote of, seek to understand before you're understood. Joe, I say that every day. If I'm having a discussion with a young person, rather than saying, well, hey, Phil, I don't understand where you're coming from. I actually realize, Phil, that's actually sort of ignorant. If I take the time, I can understand. Then I'll decide, do I agree or disagree, right? On any issue. And as you well know, Joe, one of the problems, well, you and I talk about anything, one of the problems we have in the country right now, I believe, is that things are so polarized. I mean, it's so, think about how things operated when you and I were younger. Well, you and I are still young, but back in the past. Now, there's no middle ground. I mean, you're either for immigration or you're against immigration. Well, wait a minute. Is there some in between? You're either against guns or for guns. Well, wait a minute. Is there some in between? But interesting enough, Joe, if you only understand, in fact, my grandfather used to say to me, tease me, he said, Harry, life is much simpler when you only understand your side of the story. There's a lot of sides to the story, a lot of sides of the story. And that's why in that after self-reflection, that the second principle, Joe, I always talk about, of take the time to understand all sides of the story. And very few people do that, Joe.
Right. There's no gray any longer.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's a mammoth problem, Joe, because as you well know, the answer to most things from your business, the answer usually is somewhere in between. But if you're not willing to negotiate, you're not willing to listen to anything, no wonder we get nothing done.
So in the book, Year 168, you share a number of great stories, which I really appreciate. There's one in particular about a friend and colleague of yours who had a wake-up call. And I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about his experience and what some of the lessons learned were.
Yeah, and I'll even share with you, Joe, a little model that maybe actually be helpful. So this is kind of crazy, but I'll run this by you. You can tell me what you think, and then I'll give you, start general, get real specific for you. What I always say is, when you say you want to have a life balance, Joe, I don't think any of us ever live a balanced life, okay? We try, right? But we're always, so it's in a way, Joe, it's almost how close to that can we stay? So here's the crazy analogy I'll give you that also impacted my friend. Let's assume, Joe, you and I are in New Jersey together, and you and I are going to drive to Chicago, right? Now, I think it may be Route 80, it's like 800-900 miles. Now, if you use the analogy, if we could stay on 80 the entire time and never leave that road, maybe you think of an analogy of, well, that would be our life balance. But the reality, Joe, is you and I are driving and you need a cup of coffee. I need a burger. One of us needs to go to the restroom, want to go in a hotel. So instead of we're on that line, we're kind of weaving around. But interestingly, Joe, when we get off at an exit ramp, we know where we got off. We know why. And we're going to get back on. Okay. So now the life experience of that one, Joe, would be one of my daughters says, hey, Dad, could I go for a bicycle ride with you? And I say, oh, honey, I'd really love to, but I'm doing this podcast with Joe. I can't do it today. Now, I know I said no, but I know she's one of the most important things in my life. So now it's tomorrow, Joe. And I'm heading off to play tennis with you. And she says, oh, Dad, can we go for a bike ride? Well, I have to call you, Joe, and say, Joe, we're not playing tennis. I'm going on a bike ride. So we got off. We know why we got off. And we're getting it back on. Now, here's the second story, Joe. You and I are in New Jersey. We're driving to Chicago. And I'm getting kind of tired. And I say, hey, Joe, I'm going to crawl in the back seat and sleep for a while. So I'm sleeping. And all of a sudden, you yell out, Harry, we got a problem. Joe, what's the problem? Harry, I'm not too sure of the route, but there's a sign here that says entering Atlanta. Now, I don't know the last time, Joe, you drove from New Jersey to Chicago, but if you're entering Atlanta, we got a major problem, which I would say, and you and I know these people, Joe, these are the people who they gain 50 pounds. They got a heart problem, okay? Their spouse left them and they don't even know they left, okay? Their children are, you know, whatever. And this whole idea of you better make sure that you've got people that are actually saying to you, what are you doing? And I had this very good buddy of mine, super good guy that I mentioned, and he was doing really well. He was the CEO of a company, and he gained a lot of weight. He had all kinds of health problems. I think his marriage was in difficulty. And thank God somebody said to him, what are you doing? What are you doing? And he ended up leaving, and now he's a professor at Kellogg. His whole life has been changed. And what's very interesting, Joe, I realized, and I should have mentioned this earlier, and you know, you well know this, is that when you say you want to be self-reflective and be self-aware, yes, you spend a little bit of time in self-reflection yourself. But as you know, Joe, you got to find a few people that you can bounce this off of, right? Or as my wife, Julie, will say, Joe, Harry, left to your own devices, you can convince yourself of anything. Do you want to know what I think? Now, after 40 years, Joe, you and I know the answer to that is yes. You may not think it's yes. It's absolutely yes.
Okay? Always yes.
Yeah. And I really do believe having some people, Joe, that, you know, could be a sibling, could be a fellow roommate, but having people that'll just say, hey, Joe, you know, I hear you talking about your values. I hear you saying, but Joe, I'm looking at your actions, pal, and the words and the music aren't working together here, pal. So I'm trying to get people to really do two things, Joe, to take the time to figure out what they're doing and why, and have a couple of people that can say, you know what, are you living what you're talking about? And I think that has an enormous impact. And I'm sure from all the work that you're doing with consulting and helping people think about their second act of thinking about this, right?
The self-reflection is so key, just raising the awareness and being able to have those cycles, create those cycles of thinking things through, taking action, reflecting on what happens and continuing to learn and avoiding surprise. Yeah. As you said, because nothing against Atlanta, but if you're heading to Chicago, that's not where you want to be.
Exactly.
Curious, what role do you think habits play in a values-based life?
I think habits, Joe, play a very significant role. And the reason for that is we all know there's areas we can improve. We all know that. And then we say, oh, geez, I really should be exercising, or I should be spending more time with the children. But to say that and actually do it, as you know, Joe, are two very different things, right? A friend of mine who runs one of these national fitness places, exercise, says, Harry, you wouldn't believe that something like 80% of the people who in December sign up for this, by the time it gets to be February 15th, they checked out of it. And one of the things I've realized is it really does take a couple things that you have to do. And I tease about it, Joe, and I talk about four words maybe in the book. Discipline, focus, consistency, and credibility. And I think about it very personally, Joe, to think, if I'm going to do something, I got to be disciplined. I have to stay focused. I have to do it consistently. And if I do, then I start to establish a little credibility with myself, and maybe I can have credibility with you. But you have to decide, is it a realistic goal? The example I often like to use, Joe, it's a little bit like you run into somebody, they have never exercised, they don't do an exercise, and they say, you know, I'm going to start exercising. And they live in Chicago, they buy a pair of sneakers, and they say, well, I just signed up for the Chicago Marathon. I say, wait a second, you've never walked 3 blocks and you're going to run 26 miles? Let's think about this for a minute, because you're setting yourself up for a disappointment. I mean, why don't you say, hey, you know what? I've got a goal. A month from now, I'm going to get a couple of guys and we're going to run a mile. We're going to run 2 miles, right? Is it some, and are you serious? Are you disciplined? Are you focused? Are you consistent? And another example I'll give you, Joe, I can't remember whether this is in the book or not, But a guy walks up to me and he says, well, I'm going to start exercising. I said, okay, Ralph, that's good. Of course, you look at Ralph and you say, hey, he could do a little exercise. That'd be good for him. Well, then you don't see Ralph for 3 months and you see Ralph. Ralph, how you doing? You can tell he hasn't. Well, I haven't had a chance to exercise. But Harry, you'll understand. Well, why is that? Well, Harry, I travel 60% of the time. By the time I get to the hotel, the fitness center closes at 9. You'll understand. And I said, okay. And he says, well, Harry, I'd like to know what you think. I have several bad habits, Joe. One is when people ask me what they think, I assume they really want to know. Not always a great idea. So I said, well, Joe, I'll tell you what. Joe, I travel at least 60% of the time, but I've had a rule for 40 years. I do not stay in a hotel that doesn't have a 24-hour gym, or I work out a deal with the desk clerk that I'll get the key. Because I often don't get there till 11 o'clock at night, right? If I've got to go to a dinner in Boston or something. I tell Ralph, now, Ralph, if it doesn't matter to you, if it's not a priority, that's okay. It's okay. But just don't be surprised. And again, as I always say, Joe, the thing that amazes me is the number of people that are surprised. A lot of surprised people running around, Joe. A lot of surprised people.
Absolutely. Another thing that struck me in your book was the phrase genuine humility. And I noticed that genuine humility and making a difference are obviously key parts of a values-based life. I wonder if you could tell us about the One Acre Fund that you mentioned and your involvement with it.
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks, Joe. I'd love to. So first of all, when I talk about the four principles that really matter, self-reflection, balance, true self-confidence, not self-confidence, true and genuine humility. And I literally think to myself, you know what? If the whole model, Joe, I use three words in my model, leadership, influence, ability to relate. Okay. Leadership, as you know, has nothing to do with titles and org charts. It has everything to do with the ability to influence people. How do you influence people? You have to be able to relate to people, right? If I can figure out a way to relate to somebody, you can influence them, I can lead them. And most people do not relate well to egomaniacs. And I really do believe if you never forget where you came from, and you and I have been very fortunate, Joe, but if you never forget where you came from and you treat everybody the way you want to be treated, well, then in my mind, you're starting to develop genuine humility. And I never say humility without genuine, because we've all worked for people, Joe, that'll say, well, everybody's important. But then you watch what they do and you realize that's just a bunch of happy talk. And the way I get people to think about this at school, Joe, is I'll have a big group of students and I'll say, well, how many of you want to be a leader? Of course, everybody raises their hand. Well, how many of you people think you relate well to people? Everybody raises their hand. I said, all right, now, no, raise your hand. I don't embarrass anybody. But when you come into the building, how many of you know the name of the receptionist? How many of you know the names of the folks in the maintenance department? How many, when you go into the cafeteria, do you know how many children they have and what their favorite team is? Okay? Because if you know that and you relate to every single person, has an enormous impact, right? Because people like to work with people who feel like they can relate to them. So that's how I think of the genuine humility piece. The other piece that we talk a lot about is all the issues in the world, Joe, right? And one of my first classes, we talk about, all right, global healthcare issues, digital divide, the environment, global poverty. And I'll tease the students and they'll say, well, all right, now who's going to deal with all these issues? And they'll say, well, there seems to be this magical group of people called those guys. This, by the way, is a gender-neutral term, Joe, but these people are all over the place. There's men and women who, and I say, no, we are those guys. I mean, you and I are so blessed, Joe. If we're not part of it, who is? And I had one of the students who, super good guy, he took a trip to Kenya, and it was pretty clear when he came back, he wasn't going to work for an organization in New York. And he said, you know what? I'm actually moving to Kenya. And I said, well, what's going on? He said, well, can you believe that in the 21st century, this is 12 years ago, that 80% of the world's poorest people are farmers. And he said, quite frankly, if we could get these folks better seeds, better fertilizer, we could double or triple the crop yield on these farms. And he said, I'm moving over there. So we raised some money, and he's been over there now. And here's a little cliff note version. He started in Kenya, Joe. He's now in Rwanda. They've opened up operations in five other countries, Ethiopia and so on. And he said, I'm not coming back. They've hired 10,000 Africans. They've doubled or tripled the crop yield on 1.1 million farms. That's already saved the lives of 4 million kids. So when my first book came out, From Values to Action, I called him and said, hey, you know what? From Values to Action, you're the best example. In fact, you can look it up. It's Andrew Youn, Youn. And it's the website, Joe, is oneacrefund.org. And there's a TED Talk on this. So I told him, I said, when I'm not teaching, and I'm not running around on boards. I said, once a month, I will do leadership talks, or talks like we're doing today. And all the proceeds from the talks and the books will all go to the One Acre Fund. So I was going to do one a month, Joe. And I think my talk with you today is my 1,271st talk in the last 8. I do at least 3 or 4 of these every week, Joe. In fact, Dean Jacobs, who was my mentor before he passed away at 90, he really believed in what you're doing. He said, "Harry, how are things going?" I said, "You know, this is like a trifecta." I said, "This potpourri thing, I said, I get to spread values. It's great for Kellogg. And we raise a lot of money for the 1 acre fund. It's like a trifecta." And as bright as he was, he said, "Harry, it's not a trifecta. It's a fourfecta." So I said, "Because you love doing it. You're going to do this till you're 90. And I said, "Well, God willing, that's the intention. That's the intention." But it's interesting, Joe, to see, and this is one of the nice things in the younger generation, they really, truly want to make a difference. They really do. I mean, this is maybe a little bit of a generalization, Joe, but I think when you and I were in school, we were good guys, but hey, we got to get a house. We got to get a car. We got to get ourselves set. Well, I think a lot of these folks are saying, "I don't have to wait till I'm 50. I'm going to do something now." I'm sure that's true with your kids. I mean, when I was at Kellogg, Chief, maybe 2% of the students 40 years ago were involved in nonprofits. At Kellogg, at Northwestern now, Joe, 90% of these students are involved in at least 1 or 2. They're viewing it as, "What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for?" And I so admire what they're doing. And as you know, Joe, a lot of these kids are saying, "I don't think I need a house. I mean, I look what the house. And by the way, what do I need a car for? I can Uber." I mean, so it's like, so that's why, Joe, they've done this real shift for them. Maybe your kids will. Everything is about an experience. I don't know about you, Joe, but I didn't leave the country until I was like 30. I mean, I have like kids in college. I'll say, "Oh, what are you doing?" "Oh, we got a wedding I'm going to." "Where's the wedding?" "Tokyo." "Tokyo, like Tokyo, Japan? Are you kidding me?" I mean, we're living in a different world here, Joe, for sure.
Our oldest daughter got married in Vigo, Spain last year on August 9th.
"Oh, you're kidding me." "You're almost, oh my God. Well, this August 9th thing, Joe, is amazing." Wow. Yeah.
What a great story, though. And it's great to hear about your involvement. Talk about impact. 1 acre fund. That's serious impact.
People making a difference, Joe.
So if someone listening to this wants to make the most of their 168 starting in 2021, what's the best way to start?
You know, Joe, super, super question. I have to reflect on this, Joe. I actually think I would say, take a little bit of time. First, get off by yourself. Turn off the noise. Turn off the gadgets. And literally take a long walk, Joe, by yourself first, then maybe with a significant other, a spouse, whatever, and just start to ask those questions. What really are my values? What's my purpose? What matters? And however much time I have, am I living it in a way that I feel good about? And this may sound a little morbid, but you can tell, Joe, I'm a pretty positive guy. But there was a young woman once who said to me, "Well, how do you know whether you really feel this self-reflection has really impacted your life in a significant way?" And this sounds a little crazy, but it's the way I think about it, Joe. If you and I are having this discussion right now, and all of a sudden while we're talking, I get a phone call from my doctor. And he says, "Harry, I just looked at your charts from yesterday. And I want to let you know right away, Harry, you've got 3 days. Now, you can start running around and go to places or, you know, Penn or Mayo, but you got 3 last days. And I tell the students, "Now, how would you react to that?" I said, my sense is many, many people react, "Oh, no, whoa, I got to run around and I got to do all these things," whatever. And I said, the reaction I hope I have, Joe, I hope I have, is, "Well, thanks, doc, but I knew I had 3 last days. We all have 3 last days. So since you don't know when they are, why would you live any time as if it, whether you get mad at people, well, did you apologize before you went to bed that night? Did you really think it through? Because this whole idea of, well, there'll be time later. Well, you know, they always say, you know, he will say, we don't know the time and the hour. Okay. So live your life the way you treat people, the way you interact with people, as if it was your last 3 days. And I think that will make an enormous difference in people's life, Joe. And then right after that, as we said, when you're starting to get your head around that, find some people who will really be honest with you. "Hey, Joe, you're a really great guy. But you know, Joe, I'm a little surprised that you do this or you don't do this." And it's like, whoa, yeah, no, that really is valuable. Thank you. That's valuable. That's the way I kind of think about it, Joe.
Harry, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. It's a great book. Highly recommend. And there's so much in there that can be used in so many different ways for good. And thank you for taking the time to share with us.
Well, I appreciate it, Joe. And 2 things. One, if you send to me, I'll put it on my website. And if there are, I should say this, if some of your listeners, Joe, if they want a more detailed understanding of all of the reflection questions, my Kellogg folks actually set up a website for me, Joe. That's just harrykramer.org. And all the questions are there. Everything is up there. And I respond to all of the emails. And just really great to meet you, Joe. And feel free to shoot me an email anytime. And I wish you the very best.
Same to you. Thank you, Harry. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you to Harry Kramer for taking the time for a great conversation and for sharing his insights with all of us. And when you step back and think about it, this time of year is perfect for the type of self-reflection that he recommends. It's also a great time to think, what kind of habits, what new habits might I want to create in the new year? And 2021 will obviously be a year with its own challenges, but it promises to be a far better year. I think we're all ready to say goodbye to 2020 and welcome to the new year, but this can get us off to a strong start. I think we can all benefit by following his suggestion. Step back a bit. Think about, where are our lives aligned well with our values? Where are some of those places where they're not? Where are the gaps? Where are some places we can make some changes in the year ahead? I once had a mentor. I was fortunate to have a number of great mentors over my corporate career, who remarked to me one day that you can always tell people's values just by a glance at their calendar. It really does come down to the choices we make with how we invest our time, and are we investing our time in the things that matter most to us. I also thought it was interesting to hear about Harry's involvement in the 1 Acre Fund, because I think that's an indication that he walks the talk. And you'll see a link to the 1 Acre Fund in the website, along with links to his website and his book. Highly recommend the book, Your 168. Great ideas, great suggestions, great stories in the book. Very, very useful. Thank you for listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, and wishing you a great end of year and a fantastic 2021.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.